ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय
ॐ
नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय
Bhagavatam 117, The Punishment of a World of Kali. Text number 28. Iti Dharmam Mahim Shaiva. Santva Yitva Maharataha. Nishata Malade Khadgam. Kalaye Dharma Hetavahe. Iti, thus, Dharma, the personality of religion, Mahim, the earth, Cha, also, Eva, as, Sanivayitva, after pacifying, Maharataha, the general who could fight alone with thousands of enemies. Nisatam, sharp. Adade, took up. Khadgam, sword. Kalaye, to kill the personified Kali. Adharma, irreligion. Bhave, Hetave, the root. Maharaj Parikshit, who could fight 1,000 enemies single-handedly, thus pacified the personality of religion and the earth. Then he took up his sharp sword to kill the personality of Kali, who is the cause of all irreligion. Please repeat. Maharaj Parikshit, who could fight 1,000 enemies single-handedly, thus pacify the personality of religion and the earth. Then he took up his sharp sword to kill the personality of Kali, who is the cause of all irreligion. Purports by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada, founder and Acharya of the International Society for Krishna Consciousness. As described above, the personality of Kali is he who deliberately commits all kinds of sinful acts which are forbidden in the revealed scriptures. This age of Kali will certainly be full of all activities of Kali, but this does not mean that the leaders of society, the executive heads, the learned and intelligent men, or above all, the devotees of the Lord, should sit down tightly and become callous to the reactions of the age of Kali. In the rainy season, certainly there will be profuse rainfalls, but that does not mean that men should not take means to protect themselves from the rains. It is the duty of the executive heads of state and others to take all necessary actions against the activities of Kali or the persons influenced by the age of Kali. And Maharaj Pariksha is the ideal executive head of the state, for at once he was able to kill the personality of Kali with his sharp sword. The administrator should not simply pass resolutions for anti-corruptional steps, but they must be ready with sharp swords to kill the persons creating corruptions from the angle of vision of the recognized Shastras. The administrators cannot prevent corrupt activities by allowing wine shops. They must at once close all shops of intoxicating drugs and wine and force punishment even by death for those who indulge in habits of intoxication of all descriptions. That is the way of stopping the activities of Kali, as exhibited herein by Maharaj Parikshit, the Maharata. So this continues with the story of how Maharaj Parikshit is encountering Kali Yuga, because before this it was Dwapara Yuga and things were quite auspicious and peaceful and people were acting properly and people had mystical powers just by saying things they could get results. Yeah. Of course before that was Treta Yuga, before that was Satya Yuga. Yeah. So Kali Yuga is you know, absolute evil in the ultimate sense. As you remember, you know, Prabhupada said, you cannot imagine how bad the Kali Yuga is going to get. Right? Your hair would stand on end, your eyes would bulge from your sockets, and the blood would go cold in your veins if you understood how bad Kali Yuga is going to get. I can tell you some stories that were just unbelievable. Because Kali Yuga is Krishna's own negative side, the dark side of the force. So it's really bad, evil. You know? And Kali is a person who says here, deliberately, he's not just being carried away by bad influences, but he knows what he's doing and he does it. You know? Kind of like Ravana. He deliberately engaging all things that are forbidden in the scriptures. Okay? Then the point is that, yes, this is going to go on. And somebody asked this yesterday. Remember, there's two quotes in the Bible. Because they say, well, you know, all these bad things are going to happen. What can we do? Or, you know, why should we condemn people who are engaged in bad activities in Kali Yuga? It's bound to come. So they told Jesus Christ the same thing, that all these bad activities are going to happen, so why should we blame people for doing it? And he said, true it is that evil must come into this world, but woe unto him by whom it comes. Woe? It's like bad fortune, bad experiences. Yeah. For it was better he was never born. The other time he said, it was better a great grinding stone was tied around his neck and he was dropped in the middle of the ocean. Yeah. So these things are going to happen, but we don't have to cooperate. Right? You know, it's going to be the ambience, the environment. But Krishna always is giving us an opportunity to make some kind of positive choice in any situation. Whether we can completely counteract it in our own lives or something else, that's something else. You know, yeah, many times you have this experience. Maharaj Parikshit says this in the beginning of Nectar of Destruction, Canto 6, that's where it's taken from. Why do people engage in sinful activities, too, no? Why do people engage in sinful activities even as if by force? Right? Because your karma is there. Karma is there. Right? I remember one time, I was more than one time. One time I was, we have an altar like this in Berkeley in San Francisco. And so after the Sandhya Artik, then the pujaris go on the altar, change all the deities, and they open again for the Shayana Artik like that in the evening. And it takes three pujaris. But one night the third pujari didn't call, didn't show up, so two of us were rushing to handle all this. And if you've done this, you know it's like a heavy thing and you have to be careful because you're moving so quickly not to hit Krishna with your elbow or something. And you definitely don't have his chance to, you know, feel happy offering him his clothes and these kind of things. You know? So, finally, when it was 8:30 or something, I came off the altar and the other pujari was going to do the artik. I was agitated, irritated. And I was going to go right to the prasadam room and drown my sorrows in halava. Something like that. You know? But I didn't want to do it. You know, but I could see that I couldn't control myself. I was... So I prayed to Krishna, please help me. You know. So then someone who crossed the temple room and said, oh, there's a phone call for you, Prabhu. And okay. You know. So then I had something to engage my senses so I could see that I could avoid going and eating all this halava and not getting up early in the morning. You know. So Krishna had taken it from here to here. Okay, impossible to control the senses even though you know it's wrong, but you can't help yourself. Now I put in the position where I had a choice. I could go and take the halava or answer the phone call and I can control my senses, you know. Halava, phone call, halava, phone call, halava, phone call, halava, phone call. So that time I took the right choice. Yeah. And somebody wanted to buy a full set of Chaitanya Charitamritas. So I sold a full set of Chaitanya Charitamritas over the phone. Okay. Then I went to the prasada room and all the halava was gone. A little piece about this big of one tulsi leaf. So I took that, you know, and felt a little hungry. Okay, nah, you know, but okay. But I went to bed and I got up early, chanted my rounds, everything else like that. Yeah. So another time, almost similar experience, I was the pujari again in the small temple in San Francisco, and somebody cooked a very nice offering, and I was controlling my mind and offering to Gornatai, and you know, for them, for their enjoyment. And but I was thinking, boy, after this is over, I'm going to eat too much. I know there's nobody else there. I was a pujari, you know. So after it was over, I took the prasadam, used every trick I know. You know, cleared the place properly, put it in different places, and you know, okay. Then Prabhupada says, if you want to eat a lot, eat one thing. He said, if you want to eat a little, eat a lot of variety. You see, it works. You eat those all variety and it satisfies you. If you're hungry, just stick on one thing until it, you know, it penetrates your body and refreshes you. So I took a little bit of everything, and I was chanting and praying and, you know, on and on like that. You know. But still, my body ate too much. And my body had acid indigestion afterwards. And my body was suffering. But I didn't suffer. You know, because Krishna saw, you're trying your best, I'll protect you. You know? So my consciousness was, yeah, my body was going through this. My body was, you know, suffering. And my body will know better next time. It does, you know. St. Francis says his body is an ass that we ride through this world. Okay, well, he was talking about brother ass. You know? But it's a fact. You know? So sometimes you can't control the ass. You know? And you try your best, you know. Some dog, there was one dog used to come to our temple every Sunday with his master, whose name was River or something. He was kind of a bigger dog, you know. He was very dignified. All the rest of the dogs outside waiting for their masters, the Sunday feast, would, you know, carry on and bark and this and that. And he would just kind of sit there in a dignified fashion. Yeah. And then one time this female dog came by, obviously in heat or something, and all the dogs were attracted by her. And he also just stood up, like his eyes went glassy, and he was like that. You know? So you could beat on him, you know, come to your senses, man. He's just gone, you know. He's a dog. He can't control himself. Dog, you know. One time, Mother, what's her name? Her name now. She's a very famous devotee. She was up in Canada. And she was a business executive before she became a devotee, you know. So during one business meeting at the temple in Canada, she started crying. And one brahmachari said, why are you crying? She said, because I'm a woman. Said, oh, okay. Women cry. Okay. So everybody has their karma. You have your destiny. You have your nature. And we try to engage in Krishna's service. And sometimes we have superhuman power to do that. You know. But sometimes we don't. Krishna just wants us to, you know, act according to our nature. And there's no, what do you call it? There's no offense involved like that. You know. The reactions will go on, but we don't identify with it. But Kali, he's described as the guy who deliberately commits all kinds of sins that are forbidden in the revealed scriptures. Yeah. And he's enjoying all this. He's participating in all this. Yeah. So Prabhupada says that, yeah, these things are going to happen. You know, and there's two options. He doesn't mention one of them. One of them is that we can accept it's going to rain and we can give everybody umbrellas. Right? Okay. Chant Hare Krishna and be happy. You know? Yeah. So you go to work, everything else, all around you, all this madness is going on, but you just chant Hare Krishna, right? And you don't get influenced by it. You don't get wet, you don't suffer like that. And other people, you can also pass umbrellas out to them. So after a while, all the streets full of people with umbrellas, except for a few fools who are like, you know, deliberately avoiding this, like that. But Prabhupada says, I mentioned earlier, that when there's a king like Maharaj Parikshit who has the authority, who has weapons, who has proper dress, who has respect, he can actually stop the Kali Yuga. In the story of Ramachandra, which is coming up on the 19th, Ram Navami, Prabhupada says, by the mercy of Lord Ramachandra, who has incarnated in the Kali Yuga as Lord Chaitanya, okay, it's possible to establish Satya Yuga. Right? Yeah. In our temples, the atmosphere was godly, was spiritual, religious, in our temples like that. What if the whole city was like this? Right? Yeah? And what if one country, you know, Poland, Czechoslovakia, you know, one country actually elected a Krishna conscious president and people like that, you know, wow, you know, it's amazing. You know? Not only would the social ambience change, I think Prabhupada said if only 15% of the population becomes devotees, the whole world will change. You know? Most people carry on because of bad association. If you see somebody acting properly, then they also just will do it, you know. So even if 10% of the people are acting, are initiated devotees in the world, the whole atmosphere will change like that. You know, what to speak of more, the president or everybody else. You know? So then, not just the social ambience, you know, and the human artifacts, but also demigods. The demigods, they become satisfied, they become pleased, they become happy, and then the whole atmosphere changes. Suddenly, Australia, the rains come to the interiors. Imagine what would happen if all the interiors would now have proper rain and everything else. You know? You could support the entire population of the planet Earth, just Australia. You know? More than that, even. You know? Bhakti Charu Swami told us, he told Prabhupada that he was kind of worried because all these idiots had nuclear weapons and they could destroy the world. You know? He said, Prabhupada laughed and said, "You don't know the power of the demigods." He said, "In one day they stop all the destruction. The second day they bring it back to normal. And the third day they make it, you know, immeasurably better than before," like that. So that's the devatas. They can do so much. You know, so. But it's Kali Yuga. You know, Krishna wants this. And so they just kind of abandon the earth at that point. And they go to the higher planets and just, you know, let it go on like that. You know, so. But if actually we actually stop the Kali Yuga, it's possible. You know, in different degrees, depending on how much power we have as administrators. Actually, if you look at the earlier chapters, how Maharaj Parikrama, how Maharaj Yudhisthira ruled the world after Krishna leaves for Dwarka, everything else, it describes how Maharaj Parikrama ruled the world. And you can see that the earth is traditionally meant to be run as one unit. There's supposed to be an emperor, right, who runs everything and coordinates everybody else like that. That's the way it's supposed to be run. When it's run like that, there's full cooperation between different planets and different atmospheres, you know, and the demigods and everything else like that. So, you know. So this is Maharaj Parikshit. You know, he's going to take his sharpened sword and go kill Kali. And Prabhupada says, especially the devotees, you know, they should become active, you know, not just words and everything else, but actually active government. And it says here they should, you know, Prabhupada says you should close all wine shops and places of intoxication. But let's look at 1738. Yeah. Here it is. So 1738. Sudavacha. Abhyartitas tadatas maistana stani kale dadao. Dutam panim striya shuna. Those are the four simple activities. Yatra dharmas chaturvida. So this is where it says, Maharaj Parikshit, thus petitioned by the personality of Kali, gave him permission to reside in places where gambling, drinking, prostitution, and animal slaughter were performed. So this is the conclusion is even Maharaj Parikshit has to make a compromise. What to speak of the temple president in ISKCON. Like that. Yeah. So, Prabhupada says, the basic principles of irreligiosity, that says pride, prostitution, intoxication, and falsehood. Yeah? Counteract the four principles of religion, namely austerity, cleanliness, mercy, and truthfulness. Personality of Kali was given permission to live in four places, particularly mentioned by the king. Gambling, prostitution, drinking, animal slaughter. Jiva Goswami directs that drinking against the principles of scriptures, such as, okay, that's not against the principles of scripture, okay, the principles of scriptures allow drinking. The principles of scriptures, such as the Sot Shaut Sautramani Yagna, association with women outside marriage and killing animals against the injunctions of scriptures, are irreligious. In the Vedas, two different types of injunctions are there for the pravrittas, or those who are engaged in material enjoyment, and for the nivrittas, or those who are liberated from material bondage. The Vedic injunctions for the pravrittas, is to gradually regulate their activities toward the path of liberation. Therefore, those who are in the lowest stage of ignorance and who indulge in wine, women, and flesh, drinking by performing Sotramani Yagna, association of women by marriage, and flesh eating by sacrifices, are sometimes recommended. Such recommendations in the Vedic literatures are meant for a particular class of men and not for all. Okay. So it seems that Prabhupada says, okay, what does it say? So Srila Jiva Goswami therefore affirms that recommendations in the scriptures for a certain class of men are never to be considered adharma or irreligious, right? Yeah. But such activities are factually adharma, and they are never to be encouraged. Okay. So that's a subtle point, because basically it seems the Prabhupada is saying you shouldn't have systematic availability of this stuff through wine shops, but through processes of religious activities like sacrificing a goat to the goddess Kali in the dark moon night, with the whole process, okay, and then drinking wine under the Sochamani Yagna, and engaging in illicit sexual indulgence in under a vow of marriage, okay. All these things are permitted, you know, they're permitted to lead people to a higher platform like that. But it should be understood that this is going to have its reaction. What's the reaction if you sacrifice a goat for eating it according to the Vedic injunctions? Yeah, we whisper in the goat's ear, okay, I'm going to kill you now, but you have the right to kill me in the future like that. So it's clear. You know? So if you do that a few times, you begin to, well, this is not a very good deal, you know. You know? Yeah, so on. Yeah. So, you know, it's there. You know, the injunction's there. And if you follow the process, it will get you freed from the attachment like that. And maybe you have to go through it. You know? Okay, so do it. And then you have to experience it, okay, but you finish it. Kardama Muni knew it was wrong to get married, but he had to do it. So Vishnu said, yeah, do it. So he married Devahuti, he went through the whole experience, okay, one lifetime. He wasn't able to go from brahmachari directly to sannyas, but he was able to go through proper grihastha ashram, renouncing it, one lifetime. Back home, back to Godhead. Okay, Kali Yuga ki. For us, okay. It has its purpose. You know? That's why the sages, they want it to come. You know? What's another good? It teaches us, but what's the advantage of Kali Yuga? Hari Nam. Yeah, Hari Nam is here also. Other ages, you had to do something before you got a bad reaction. Okay, you had to other ages, as soon as you thought the thing, you got a bad reaction. In Kali Yuga, only when you actually do it, do you get a bad reaction like that. Yeah? But of course, if you're allowing your thoughts to go wild, then, you know, it's more chance you're going to do it. And so on, yeah. But it's a fact. You know, we're not penalized for our thoughts in Kali Yuga. And also in Kali Yuga, the Harinam Sankirtan is so accessible. So accessible. Basically, in Kali Yuga, there's two choices. Go to hell or go to Goloka. Take your choice. Yeah. Other ages, you can go to Maharloka, you can go to Indraloka, you can all this kind of stuff, which, you know, won't get you out of the problem. But Kali Yuga is just really just like, hey, you know, what do you want? You want to go to hell? You want to go to Goloka? Well, I'll go to Goloka. Okay, yeah. So any comments? Yes, sir.
Guruji, I do not remember properly, but I read it. Prabhupada said that in some time there is a prostitution allowed. Yeah. Because men have appetite,
yeah.
So otherwise they would go and pollute the women from the noble family.
Yeah.
So for them there is a provision of prostitution.
Yeah. Yes. When Krishna entered Dwarka, there's a famous purport, everybody was coming to see him on different vehicles and so on. And it said that many well-known and beautiful prostitutes were also coming on their vehicles. I'm not sure what they were, on skateboards or how they were coming. But actually, as far as I can understand, the way Prabhupada uses the word prostitute, in proper English we use the word courtesan, right? You know, of course, whether Prabhupada is just calling a spade, or else he isn't familiar with these subtleties of our modern English, I don't know. Because sometimes, also I think, you know, again, speculation, okay, Prabhupada says it's okay, I'm trying to remember scriptures. When Prabhupada says women are less intelligent, he means actually less intellectual. Men and women are more emotional, men are more intellectual. Okay, people got to remember that. So, anyway, there's subtleties of the language, but in general, the way we use the word prostitute in most places is not what these ladies were like. They weren't, you know, standing under the streetlights at night, smoking cigarettes, luring the Yadu Vamsa. You know, they were, you know, well-dressed and, you know, things like this, and maybe had, you know, three or four boyfriends in their whole life, like that, or something like that, and so on. You know, like that. And different things like that. But that, you know, yeah, the ideas there, Prabhupada described, and Prabhupada says, he says that, somebody may be caught up in a profession which is not very glorious, you know, by material estimation, but that's just a fact. You know, you're an imbecile, your mother's a prostitute, your sister's a prostitute, your aunt's a prostitute, okay, is that what I mean? You know, and that's, again, the word prostitute, your courtesan, you know. Prabhupada says, when he was, you know, growing up, there were girls from other lower class families and stuff that their family would employ cooking, cleaning, and they just couldn't give them enough money to really, like, you know, take care of themselves completely. So they were associating with other men in Prabhupada's community, Vaishyas like that. And they, you know, it was kind of dignified. They wouldn't be running here and there. One guy would be keeping them as a girlfriend and this and that, so on, you know. So Prabhupada's saying is this, that's kind of what happens in society. And the thing is to regulate it like that, right? You know, especially in Kali Yuga, these things are going to happen, and so we regulate it, adjust it. And Prabhupada's saying, yeah, in certain situations, and then there are Dharma Shastras that describe Parasara. Prabhupada says that Parasara is Dharma Shastras for Kali Yuga. And he gives all kinds of very practical suggestions that aren't going to occur in such a yuga. Things like that. Manu is more for, I guess, Dwapara Yuga. Kreta Yuga, like that. Much, much more strict. Yeah? But Parasara gives you different suggestions about how to deal with these things and so on. Yeah. Yeah.
But even in the Treta Yuga, there was prostitution.
Okay.
Because that procession, which was going at the time of coronation of Lord Rama,
okay,
there were well known prostitutes, yeah, in that procession.
Okay, courtesans. Yeah. Yeah. And Kubja was also a courtesan. Okay. Any more comments on the topic?
I have two questions.
Yeah.
You were saying before about engaging our nature in service.
Yeah.
And but at the same time, like, the purest devotional service is when you do whatever Krishna wants.
Yeah.
So how do we try to, how do you say
that? Well, you have to understand what level you're on. Again, you can see I just can't control myself. You know, okay, so I'm trying my best, Krishna, please help me. And the Krishna says, I don't know, you're trying your best, you're a dog. go. And it's okay, you know. And so, yeah, you eat too much or do something, become angry and stuff, and then people, he's the president, Prabhu, he's a little passionate, you know. Why is the president so passionate? You know, because he's the president. He has to have some, you know, some fiery nature and stuff like that. You know, I was president sometimes, it was a complete catastrophe, because, you know, I'm Shudra, Brahmana, Brahmana, Brahmana. So none of those work as a temple president. Everybody got me out of there as soon as possible. You know? But yeah, I did it, and I did my best, and I was empowered. I could see Krishna was giving me, like, you know, ability to do stuff I didn't have, you know, so on. You know? But as soon as possible, okay, you should put somebody else in here. It's their nature. You know? So then we see, what is my actual level? What's happening? You know? Ladoshvada, Sadhu Sangha, Vajna Kriya, Nartane Vritti, Nishta, Ruchi, Karma Yoga, Jnana Yoga, Bhakti, Jnana Yoga. If we had got the seed, the bija, we had some experience of Krishna consciousness, we know that's what I want to do, then we're engaged in karma, mishra, bhakti yoga. It's bhakti yoga, we know the goal, but I have to stop smoking, I gotta stop drinking, I gotta stop watching, you know, ladies' fashion magazines, you know. Enough. You know? And if we do that properly for Krishna, then yeah, we get free from these activities. Our activities and possessions become purified. But we still don't understand the philosophy so correctly. So then we go to Jnana Yoga. Logically, we put it together like we're doing right now. This is Jnana Yoga. What comes first? Which is the best? What comes after that? What replaces this? You know? And then we understand it all. It's pretty beautiful. Yeah. Then we now we're in Jnana Yoga. Okay, now I understand. Then of course it's so easy to control your senses because your mind is okay. And then okay, I understand it all, and now I can really start to concentrate. You know, oh Prabhu, you know, you're chanting your rounds and all these things, thoughts are coming about this and that. But your intelligence is so purified that this tells your mind, no, it's the time to chant. Everything's okay. There's a schedule. You know? So then Dhyana, and we actually start to meditate. In the West, we don't learn this at all. There's almost no training whatsoever in jhana like that. You know? Improvisational theater actually trains you in meditation and how to get in touch with these different things like that, and manifest completely different personalities and so on like that. You know, you see these people like Robin Williams or something like that. They just, you know, these techniques they learn. They went to training for this. So that's dhyana, meditation, contemplation. You get behind your personality and start to, like, you know, focus on things, contemplate it. And when you do that, you really know Krishna. Really, this, you're meditating on him. You know him. Then bhakti yoga. But now it's not. You know, jnana mishra bhakti yoga, bhakti yoga. Right? Maitreya Muni, in the third canto, is an example of a jnana mishra bhakti. If you met him, you'd think he was such a nice person, so generous, everything like that. But he didn't appreciate the importance of a personal relationship with Krishna. He knew different scriptures and stuff like that. But when he saw Krishna and Uddhava together, talking, then he realized, wow, that's, yeah, having a personal relationship with Krishna, that's the real importance. Yeah. But he still didn't realize it. So then Uddhava sent Vidura to become his student. Right? Because he knew Vidura was a very advanced devotee, so when he started asking him, what did you hear in that conversation between Uddhava and Krishna? So Maitreya would repeat it, Shravanam, Kirtanam. Then he would start, as he was repeating the questions, he would then like have to put it together properly, then he would like himself realize what he heard, you know, by smart. So everybody's on different levels, you know. Arjuna in the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna is recommending karma yoga. You know? Do your duty as a kshatriya, you know, but sacrifice the results for me. Right? You know? That's one level of karma yoga. At that level, you know, you're still attached to your mode of working. The Prabhupada says in the beginning we're attached to a certain kind of service, but later on we fall in love with Krishna. Some girl, she's a good brahmacharini, doing sankirtan, making flower garlands, everything else, you know, okay. But she's feeling, God, this is not a real life, you know. I want to be married, I want to really just, you know, do service with my husband and help him in his service and raise up some kids properly as a devotee, and how many girls relate to this? So yeah, it's like, you see, your karma, you know, to be a mother, to be a wife and stuff, is just there, okay. So you're not in the level where you can renounce your mode of working. You can renounce the fruits. You know, ladies want to take good care of their kids, so when they're old, their kids will be lawyers and doctors, and we'll make sure they have a nice house and nice clothes and nice medication and prestige in society. And, you know, what's the image? In your rocking chair with little grandchildren around you, smiling, saying wise, clever things, you know, okay. Actually, this is Russia. When I was in Russia, it was called Germany's the Fatherland, and Russia is Mother Russia. But I was there, I said, it seems to me more like Grandmother Russia. They were thinking, yeah, you're right. That's the image of this old babushka with her, you know, her thing tied around her neck, and out in the country with the goats and the kids and laughing and saying wise things and pulling her son's beard, like that. And that's what they die for. You know, yes, babushka. So on. So it's a very powerful image, you know. And it's very natural. Then society is organized, okay. You know? But Karmi, not a Vikarmi, she wants to take care of her kids, so they'll take care of her, when she's an old lady. A devotee, she says, no, I'll take care of my kids because it's my service to Krishna. And if they all become brahmacharis and I have to live in the brahmacharini ashram 85 years, okay, let it happen. Whatever Krishna wants. I give it all to Krishna. You know, like that. But she can sacrifice the results, but she can't sacrifice the mode of working. She got to have kids for Krishna. Got to have this stuff for Krishna. Okay? Maybe some people are on this level. What do you do? Try to renounce it? No. You do it for Krishna. Right? So that's what Krishna is recommending in Bhagavad Gita. It's not that high. That's why for devotees sometimes it's a little confusing, you know, for us. Arjuna, Duryodhana can't sacrifice the results. He wants to ride in the big elephant and have people throwing flowers in front of him. Jaya, Jaya, Duryodhana. You know? But Krishna, Arjuna wants to put Krishna on the elephant. He wants to go in front throwing flowers. But he has to work like a kshatriya. He can't imagine, okay, I'll go to the forest, I'll renounce. Arjuna, if he was here, would be about this tall, right? Very good looking, beautiful mustache. All the girls would just look at him and, you know, Prabhu, could you do this? Yes, of course. Could you do this? Yes, of course. Yeah. Can you do this? Yes, sir. Like, yeah, very. Probably you see, you're sitting here looking at everybody, talking to people, make an estimate. Hey, mates, we're going to take over this planet in 17 days. Are you with me? Yeah. We're just, you know, born to conquer, born to lead men, like that and so on. So he's going to go to the forest and sit there and chant japa, you know, 128 rounds a day, you know. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Krishna. You know, that's what he says. He can't do it. He's damned if you do and damned if you don't. He can't fight the battle, he can't walk away. You know? So Krishna says, fight it, but sacrifice the results for me. I want to renounce like Vyasadeva. You're not on the same level as Vyasadeva. Yeah? So do it for me. Right? So that's what karma is. Two kinds of karma yoga. One, you sacrifice the results, and the other, you can actually sacrifice your mode of working. I had tests in the university. Anybody have these tests in the university? They test you for your psychological tendencies, what your work styles are, if you're crazy or not. More and more, you're going to gun down your fellow students. Yeah. Anyways, it took a whole day. It always took 2 days of testing. You know? So one was occupational proclivities. Okay. So I got scientists and all this kind of stuff. And at the bottom, maybe out of 100 points, maybe 5 points, was banker. Okay. So when I joined the temple, guess what the first service I got was? Treasurer. You know, I was just saying, I kind of remembered this thing. I said, why is this? You know, oh, nobody's a treasurer. Well, you'd be the treasurer. So I remember like the first Sunday feast after I moved in the temple, and the boys would come back with all these coins. And I had these machines that would turn them and sort them, you know, put them in different things like that. I had to do it like that. So before I was going to Sunday feast, chanting everything else, and then on this night I was a devotee, and I had all this work and these coins and bills, and I remember sitting there on the floor, like looking at these bags of money, just looking at them. You know? And the kirtan starts, the lecture goes on, the second kirtan, the Sunday feast, the entire thing. I was just sitting there looking at this money on the floor and trying to find some, you know, reason, you know. I had absolutely no motivation whatsoever. When Brijbasi palmist, you know, guy, he said, you're going to have $10 in your pocket your whole life. You know? Probably, maybe with inflation, I think 36, it goes up like that. You know? Okay. But he said, for handling other people's money, I've never seen such a big line. So that's what I do. I would go to the bank sometimes as a brahmachari. I didn't have a belt. I had a rope to hold my pants up, you know, old pants. And I was going to the bank. One time I was walking to the bank with $35,000 in cash, which with inflation would probably be pushing something like about $75,000 in cash. Would you trust yourself walking down the road, temple here, bank here, $35,000? Yeah. Well, just a little bit, mate. Yeah, but for me it was a load. Oh, wow, some damn money. It was my karma. Yeah, okay. And I began to see this as my karma. So I was finally, I was, I could see what Krishna is pushing on the Gyan platform. Okay, temple president wants me to do this. Okay, he's authorized by GBC. He's authorized. I really worked the whole thing out. It was almost like taking my hand physically to make the money, but it was completely, you know, it wasn't any kind of karma yoga. So then Krishna was pushing me to do something that I knew I was devotion. I was doing it because Krishna wanted this, not because it was my tendency, like that. Yeah.
So we aspire to someday in the future purify our nature.
Yes. Yeah. Go beyond jnana yoga, and this is jnana yoga. Understanding these things, putting it together, building your intelligence. It's work. My God, this is hard work. What did he say? Oh, I forgot that. You know? And you do it. You put it together. You repeat it again. You hear it again. And then eventually your intelligence becomes very clear. You know, like that. You know? Oh, I want a cigarette. You're going to suffer. You know? Yeah, you're going to suffer. So your mind is success. You know? Yeah, I know. Your mind can't do it because your intelligence is so clear that you just know what's going to happen, like that. One phrase they have for alcoholics is insanity means doing the same thing in the same way and expecting a different result. I'll go to the bar, but I won't drink. I'll have a seltzer water with my friends. I've done this 15 times before, and every single time I ended up drinking. But this time it's different. You know? No. You know? But your intelligence becomes so strong, it tells you just what to do, and you can go to a higher level. You can keep yourself on a higher level with that. So how high can you go by jnana yoga? I don't know, maybe to Maharloka, yeah. Maybe to Brahma.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. I had a quick question.
Oh, okay.
does it say somewhere in the Shastra how Krishna conscious the golden age is going to be, like the 10,000 years?
How long the...
How Krishna conscious it will become in these 10,000 years?
No, actually, the Prabhupada says in his book someplace, there's a citation that says that for 10,000 years in the Kali Yuga, after the advent of Lord Chaitanya, there's a relative Satya Yuga. It's possible. But it's optional. If people want to take up Sankirtan, then they can make the world just like, you know, Satya Yuga. So Kali Yuga is going down, but then there's this possibility of this thing. But then after that, you know, it goes again. But it's optional. It depends how many people. Maybe half the people will take it up. Maybe 90%. You know, I think Prabhupada's saying something like at least, you know, 15%. You know, we can get by preaching. But other than that, you know, people have their choice. When you're preaching, you can see that people, they're going to make their choice. Yeah.
So it's not written anywhere in the Shastra how it will be.
No, it describes. Well, actually, the story is Ramachandra. It's describing that when Lord Ram was king. This is 9th canto, 2 chapters. When Lord Ram was king, even though it was Treta Yuga, it was like Satya Yuga. There was not even death for those who did not want it. It was on like that. You know, all the good qualities. And then the purport of Prabhupada says, by the mercy of Lord Ramachandra, who's incarnated as Lord Chaitanya, Ram Lakshman, Kijai. Actually, you can dress them up on Ram Namami as Ram Lakshman, like that. You know, they used to play like that.
Ramachandra
Shila. Ah, okay. And some people, our South Indians, have very nice deities they worship in Denver. They bring them and stuff. So that's a nice festival. It should go on for 3 days. It should have Ramadami for 3 days. Over, whatever. So anyway, Prabhupada says that by their mercy, you know, Lord Chaitanya, as you know, Ram, it's possible to bring in all the good effects of Satya Yuga. One devotee, Ajit. He had a dream. He woke up. He was in the temple in Denver, and he came from the Grihastha apartments down the hill, and there was a big parking area, going to the temple from Mangalarti. And he saw Prabhupada walking in the parking lot. You know, he said, "Sure, Prabhupada, what are you doing?" This is his dream. And Prabhupada said, "Come here." And he came over, and Prabhupada touched him, and they both just shot right up in the sky, like, and he was screaming, "Ah!" And then he looked down on the earth, and the whole earth was just happy. You know, everything was related to Krishna, and people were happy, there was sufficient, everything else, you know. And Prabhupada said 3 times, don't think this won't happen like that. You know? It brings up another point here. On the internet there's a guy named Weiss, on the YouTube, I think that's his first name. But he was a psychiatrist. I'll finish off with this point here. Okay. He was a psychiatrist. He's still emeritus director of the Mount Sinai Psychiatric Hospital in Miami, Florida. So big, you know, fellow. I mean, he's Jewish, maybe. So he was doing hypnotic regression like that, you know, go back and this and that. And I used to do this. Actually, like I mentioned, I've cured one person of phobia and stuff. It works. And you go back to things that cause different problems in your life and stuff. As a devotee, chanting and everything else, I've actually, without doing hypnosis, I've gone through things. And I remember how my mother treated me as a child, and that had a big influence on my personality on certain things. And then, oh, what is it? Yeah, okay. You know, and so a lot of these psychological obstacles, you know, our process is very good for dealing with any kind of psychological problem. But anyway, some more you have hypnosis. So he was doing this and helping people, psychologists, psychiatrists. Then one girl in the hospital, she was an inhalation therapist and everything else. And so she had this terrible claustrophobia, you know, fear of closed places. She had to walk up the stairs. She couldn't fly on airplanes, everything else. You know. So he was dealing with her and this and that, and hypnotic induction. Okay, go back to when you're going to go back now to when this first happened and everything else, like this and that, so forth, so on. Okay, like that. Okay, where are you? What's happening? Well, the centurion has just left, and the pharaoh, and the... Huh? On the Nile, huh? Like that, you know. So she was just following instructions, you know. She'd gone back to something like about, you know, I don't know, 800 BC or something like that, or 1000 BC, you know. And he thought, this is completely ridiculous. We are this body, you know, we're produced from the mind, everything else, what's going on, you know. But her story was that she was like a serving maid of some high-placed religious official in the Egyptian government. And when her master died, her and two more girls were put right in the tomb along with him, alive, to serve him in the afterlife. So she developed this real bad, you know, experience towards closed spaces. Okay. So anyway, whatever, we're going to deal with this, he decides. So he then took her forward, and she jumped. The experience jumped like several lifetimes, always the same sex, you know. And the experience would go on like that, this claustrophobia and stuff, you know. And it cured her. So he was trying to resist the idea that there's reincarnation, everything else we describe as this. And so finally it came to the point where she's up to, like, you know, contemporary life. And she said, oh, you're hypnotized. Oh, doctor, your father's here, and he wants to tell you he's very happy, everything's okay. And your son's here too, and your son says everything's okay. His heart's incorrect now. It's in the correct, you know, direction. At that point, he said he just gave up and accepted that everything she was doing was valid. Yeah. His son, when he was born, it was something that the arteries were in backwards, like that. And the doctor said, you know, your kid's going to live within hours. And actually he died maybe like a day and a half after he was born. And he said that nobody knew this. His wife knew there was a heart problem. She didn't know specifically what it was. And nobody else knew this. And it was impossible for this girl to know this from any source like that. So that's the point he accepted as some kind of reincarnation. Then he started doing these past life regressions and stuff and helping people. So this is maybe like about 15 years ago, maybe less than that, maybe 10 years ago. So finally he started coming up to the Psychiatric Association. The psychiatric board called him in to, like, you know, annihilate him, whatever. But he's a big guy, and other people were benefiting from this, and he already had contaminated a lot of other people who were starting to do the same thing, reputable people, and Prabhupada's books had gone out to a lot of people. So they basically said, well, be careful. And they never gave him a formal reprimand or anything like that. So that's what's happened in terms of reincarnation. And near-death experiences have come to the point now where reputable scientists can investigate it, and people kind of keep an eye on it. And maybe they should, because there's a lot of bogus stuff going on. But now, but before it's finished, you're out. You're nuts, you know, if you believe in reincarnation or something like that. So there are many things on YouTube about reincarnation. But anyway, so he was doing this. He did a lot of people. And a lot of traumas, most psychologists know this, you know, accept this. A lot of the traumatic experiences that we have that cause real big problems are from previous lifetimes. You know, either something happened, there's famous movies and stuff about people, obviously, with some previous lifetime like that. You know. And you carry it with you because it was such a good experience or a bad experience, it's there in your subtle body, it's there in your subconscious. Prabhupada liked Carl Jung. He said of all these guys in dialectical spiritualism, he seemed to have the most intelligence. You know? And he was a nice person. He believed in God and many things. But same thing too is that, you know, these experiences, you carry them in your... And Prabhupada didn't like unconscious, but he liked subconscious, which is Buddhi, basically. So some of these memories are very deep, and they're influencing, they're orienting you, but you don't really have full conscious access of them, but you know this is right, or this is wrong, or watch out, or, you know... like that, and they carry them. So, okay, the point I'm trying to make, though, then he's a really creative guy. He said, what about future progressions? We've done regressions, let's try progressions. Like that, already bold. You know? So he started, like, hypnotizing people and having them go into future lives. You know? And we know, this is a fact, your lifetimes are determined, right? You know, you're going to take 1,000 births as a cow and be killed for every cow here on the, you know, here on the body you kill, or whatever, you know. Yes, yeah, so certain things are already fixed. You know? It's interesting taking our philosophy and matching it up with these guys' experiences, you know, what happens, what doesn't happen. Okay, so his progressive things, he avoided, like, you know, 5 years from now or 10 years from now. I think he tossed it a minimum of 200 years in the future so he wouldn't start getting problems with people, like, you know, betting on the lottery or, you know, that kind of stuff. So his result, his prognosis is that 200 years from now, things will practically be the same as they are now. They won't be worse. They won't be better. We'll be doing a lot of work in the ocean, like harvesting things from the ocean and that kind of stuff. And people are just the same thing, totally independently coming up with the same kind of things like that. And kind of this whole thing about the ocean is kind of surprising, you know. So we're thinking about spreading Krishna consciousness all over the world, changing the world, but maybe we're not going to have, like, you know, we're going to solve it all so quickly, you know. Then after that, there's some space in between where something happens and the population gets drastically reduced and everything is really nice, like that. You know, like we're describing, like Satyayuga has come in. You know? So, you know, we, Haribol, maybe, maybe, yeah, we're going to be able to do something. Because if something happens, if we don't get quick results, we become frustrated and we start to lose our enthusiasm. We haven't made the whole city of, you know, where are we? Melbourne Krishna consciousness has been 5 years, so Prabhu, I'm going to go back and do something else. No, maybe it's going to take some more Utsahan, Nishchaya, Darya, a little more patience. And Prabhupada, you know, a whole lifetime of preparation. But he didn't give up. And then finally, it happened, you know. So anyway, it's one possibility. Okay, let's, if it's going to happen, we're ready for this. You know? Maybe we'll make a few countries Krishna conscious and many people become devotees, but the whole world in general is still, you know. And the fact that it hasn't degraded is incredible. You know, the fact that it's actually kind of stayed the same as it is, that alone indicates like some enormous, you know, change in consciousness. You know? But then it seems, you know, if this is prediction, then it's like, okay, it matches up with our stuff. You know, Prabhupada calls this philosophical speculation. There's no evidence. We keep it there and, you know, in our minds, look for different sources like that. So maybe one indication. Okay, so far, far, keep. Thank you all very much. We're going to go fly today to Sydney. So thank you very much for hospitality and everything else. And hope your Krishna consciousness expands like anything. We can continue to participate.
Jai Ram Krishna Swami Maharaj ki.
Hey, Bhakta Das ki.